Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Obama 2.0, surrounded by business leaders against what he calls dumb regulations and for government investments in education, innovation, and infrastructure.
We're going to have to out-innovate. We're going to have to out-build. We're going to have to out-compete. We're going to have to out-educate other countries. That's our challenge.
The president this weekend in a video speech. House Republican leader Eric Cantor isn't buying it.
We want to cut and grow, because when we hear invest from anyone in Washington, to me that means more spending.
Invest and grow versus cut and grow. So on this day before the State of the Union address, let's take our first few minutes today and see how the different pieces of Obama 2.0 fit together or not from two points of view. With us are Rena Steinzer, president of the liberal think tank, the Center for Progressive Reform, and a law professor at the University of Maryland, and Jerry Boyer, conservative CNBC contributor, Forbes.com columnist, and author of a new book, The Free Market Capitalist Survival Guide, How to Invest and Thrive in an Era of Rampant Socialism. Rena and Jerry, thanks very much. Welcome to WNYC. Hello.
Very nice to be with you.
Rena, when the president published his Wall Street Journal op-ed last week saying he would go after dumb and unnecessary government regulations, you pushed back and said some of his examples were not actually of bad regulations. Do you want to start there?
Sure. I actually think that there have been very few regulations identified by anybody who charges that regulations are our problem. And that instead what the president was trying to do was to appeal to business interests who won't necessarily take what he has to say to heart. The example was that he gave in his op-ed was the regulation of saccharin as a hazardous waste. And I know that area very well, and I will tell you that no one has ever been asked to clean up a saccharin dump site.
Got another one?
I can't think of too many. In fact, I think that what we have going on right now is a bad case of regulatory failure. And just as an example, the oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico this summer clearly resulted because the regulators were not on the job policing. The alternative to regulation is that industry takes care of business itself. And that's not corporations' main strength. Their main strength is to make money.
Jerry Boyer, what's your take on the regulation part? Every president says he's going to review unnecessary government regulation. What do you make of the Obama version, and what might be accomplished from a business perspective?
Well, what I make of it is that I don't think Obama 2.0 is really an upgrade. I think it's the same Obama. But just with a different package. And, you know, it's interesting, in this discussion, it's sort of framed as business interest versus, say, government interest or the regulatory interest. But I'm not here to defend business interests. I'm here to defend the free market. And there's probably there's few groups in America that are less hostile to the free market in many cases than large business interests. And that misunderstanding creates a convenient way to push for more regulation when people have a certain resistance to big business. But in fact, it doesn't comport with reality. Big business loves regulation because big business has have big compliance departments that allow them to deal with regulatory barriers to entry. And the small businesses, which are competing with them, do not have that kind. They're not lawyered up. They don't know how to deal with those regulations.
So give me an example. Give me a good example of regulations or a regulation that big business loves that disadvantages small business.
Well, for example, we just green regulations are extremely beneficial. Ethanol subsidies, extremely beneficial to agribusiness. I mean, they're really terrible for people who actually, you know, like to eat.
But that's a subsidy. That's a subsidy, not a regulation. Are they the same?
No, it's both. And I consider subsidies regulations too. But yeah, there are regulations as well as subsidies. For instance, regulations regarding a certain amount of ethanol to be used. That's a regulation. That's a regulation put on consumption.
Mm-hmm.
So these green regulations and subsidies are extremely beneficial. I mean, why is it that the chairman of the President's New Council of Economic Advisors is the CEO of General Electric, which benefits enormously from the green industry? It's made its biggest bets on green technology. Why is that so confusing to people if you start out with the idea that the Obama administration and regulation are sort of at odds with the interest of big business? But if you take the perfect, simple public choice theory approach, which is that big businesses love this stuff, that they love export subsidies, they love manipulation of the currency to make it difficult to import things, they like to be in the room when the regulations are made, because the little guy isn't in the room when the regulations are made, which benefits the big guy as opposed to the little guy.
Rena, what's your reaction?
Well, first of all, it's been a long time since we had a free market in this country. And to talk about the free market as if it would reemerge if only we got rid of some of these regulations is an illusion. We have all sorts of subsidies. We have a tax system that makes advantages powerful players. So we're in globalization. Makes us have a market that is very complicated and is affected by other countries' rules, too. The second thing is, my example was the Gulf spill, and I would say that British Petroleum, which is certainly not a small business, was basically getting away with murder down in the Gulf. There are, at this moment, 55 inspectors to visit 3,500 rigs and platforms in the Gulf. If the government cannot put cops on the beat to make sure that people are operating safely, then what we get is this kind of uncontrolled blowout, because companies have not internalized a safety culture and have very little motivation to do it.
I'd like to respond on the BP,
I'm for policing big business. I couldn't agree. Mm-hmm. If that's what Jerry's saying, I agree with him.
Jerry, go ahead.
Well, what Jerry is saying is, and you just gave a great example of it, why was British Petroleum out in deep water drilling for oil, where the threat of a spill is much greater and the safety concerns are much more egregious? Well, because it's illegal to drill in shallow water. That's a regulation. Now, small oil producers would love for it to be legal to drill in shallower water, because it doesn't require, you know, tens of millions of dollars, even hundreds of millions of dollars in capital in order to do that. A smaller, medium-sized operator can do that. But the government says, no, you're not allowed to do that. They do it because they say it helps the environment. I do not believe that it helps the environment. And so what is the, whether intended or unintended, consequence of banning close-to-shore drilling, of banning shallow water drilling? Extremely deep water drilling. And what happens when you have a collapse or an explosion in a deep water drilling situation? What happens is what we all saw as a world. We saw us almost unable to plug the hole because it was so deep down in the water. And so people who pushed the regulations that pushed the rig way out into the deep water now say, oh, well, see, this is just a failure of regulation. Mm-hmm. We need more regulations. I say, no, you want less deep water drilling? Then allow shallow water drilling, where it's relatively easy to fill the holes.
Rena, you brought up BP. Do you want to take on this deep water versus shallow water regulation?
Well, it's certainly true that we can't drill within the sight line of public beaches. So if that's what Jerry means by shallow water, then that's true.
Yeah, that's what Jerry means.
That we're out in deep water is because we have an insatiable thirst for fossil fuel energy to maintain our lifestyle, and we are pushing the envelope of risk. We're even getting oil from sand in Canada. And this is a problem for our whole society. I'm not in favor necessarily of having a moratorium on drilling. I'm just in favor of having drilling be safe. And while
and
we're on the subject,
and shallow water. Is it not safer in shallow water? Is it not easier to plug a spill in shallow water than it is if you have to go half a mile deep?
It's not safe near the beach.
It's not safer in shallower water. You don't have less risk of explosion. And is it not easier to plug the hole in that case? I mean, let's leave aside the aesthetic thing for a moment, and maybe the individual community could make its own decision about the trade-off between aesthetics and revenues. But from a pure safety standpoint, you're not honestly telling me that it is safer to drill in a mile deep water than it is to drill in water that's a few hundred feet deep.
Rena, do you claim to know?
I don't think the beach is a matter of aesthetics. I think it's an economic issue that we've made decision about that is very important.
All right. Let me jump in, because that was a great exchange, but I want to move on from the question of BP as we continue to preview some of the themes of President Obama's State of the Union address tomorrow and some of the various points of view on that with Rena Steinzer, president of the Center for Progressive Reform, and Jerry Boyer, author of the Free Market Capitalist Survival Guide. Jerry, the debate that seems to be shaping up for the State of the Union and Congressman Paul Ryan's Republican response is, can the president position himself as newly centrist and pro-markets and pro-jobs, surrounded by GE CEO Jeffrey Immelt, as you said, and his other new pro-business or markets appointees, and still come out for targeted investment, as he calls it, for education and infrastructure and innovation aimed at exports and international competitiveness? And can he do that and not have people like you say this is just big spending liberalism in new clothes? Can he say that in your case?
Up until you said, and not have people like me criticize it, I would have said yes, he could have done all those things. And I don't see any tension between those things at all. A guy like Bill Daley, who has worked for heavily regulated industries that are very politically sensitive, the kind of jobs that people, you know, who are members of political machine families are able to get. Baby bells, a bank post that is associated with a merger that required regulatory approval. I call this crony capitalism. The people who sort of go back and forth in a revolving door between being government officials and being officials in large corporations. So can the president come out for targeted innovation grants in the company of those people? Of course. They love that. That's what they live off of. That's what Jeff Immelt makes his money doing, getting targeted grants. That's what crony capitalists do. They go on trade junkets with the Department of Commerce. They're given special deals that the little producer can't get. In exchange, of course, they're aggressively fundraised against. They get positions of influence in an administration, which they use to benefit their business. Just none of this has anything to do with a free market, which the other guest points out, we don't have a free market. We haven't had one for a long time. I agree, but life isn't made up of either perfect free market or this kind of corrupt crony capitalism. We can get it better than it is now, and I think one of the ways, putting a lot of CEOs who are subsidy seekers and want to regulate their competition out of existence is not the way to get closer to a free market.
Boy, it's a good thing GE is selling the network you work for, CNBC, or you might not have a job after the things you're saying about Jeffrey Immelt today.
Yeah, and they're selling it to Comcast, which is the president of which is another guy on that same committee. So I'm probably in hot water with CNBC anyway. So I'll speak the truth and let the chips fall where they lie.
Rena, you have any common ground with Jerry on this, or do you see the difference between spending and investment, those words, differently?
Well, let's see. I think that what is going on in this country is that we are in the middle of a jobless recovery, and one of the main reasons that that's happened is that there was deregulation of the banks. So people in the banking community were allowed to dream up these bizarre instruments that brought the housing market crashing down. We're all familiar with that narrative. We're poised on the edge of very important implementation of a variety of programs. One of them is the Dodd-Frank financial law. One of them is the implementation of the health care reform bill.
One of them is the implementation of a very important food safety bill that will protect us from products that come in from places like China that don't have any regulation at all, where we've seen melamine, which is a plastic product, mixed with milk to make milk products. So it is very clear to me that the alternative to strong regulation is a sort of Wild West atmosphere where the consumer and the person that breathes the air and the children that play in the playground are put at risk from bad practices like the ones I've just mentioned. So that's my analysis of where we are right now on the whole question of regulation. And I'm not sure. I think what Jerry is doing is he is pushing small business to the forefront, which I understand because small business is an appealing and familiar entity. And he's denouncing big companies, but his prescription, what he would do about it, is not going to help small business. It's going to help big companies.
That's where
I guess we differ.
We're almost out of time, but I just wonder if, because you've both agreed from your very different perspectives that there is no free market in this country and hasn't been one in a long time, if you would both agree on what one would look like. Rena, let me start with you on this. Do you think you and Jerry would have pretty much the same idea of what a free market, if we were to really have free market capitalism in America, were to look, what would it look like?
Well, it would,
and would you
remove
be for it?
All tax benefits, and it would remove subsidies, and it would leave the consumer to fend for him or herself. So we might have bad meat. We might have medicine that is laced with sulfuric acid, like we did in the bad old days in the early 1800s when Sinclair Lewis wrote his book, The Jungle. And I don't want to go back there. I'd like to get rid of some of these subsidies. I'd like to make the tax code cleaner. But I don't want to go back to the place where it was fend for yourself in a pretty scary market.
Jerry Boyer, you got a minute for the last word.
I don't think I advocated sulfuric acid in the medicine. That would be fraud, and free market advocates believe you shouldn't commit fraud. If she put some words in my mouth, I'm going to take them back out. I'm not pushing small business to the fore. I'm not pushing big business to the fore. I'm saying whichever business can honestly capture market share and provide the best product at the best price ought to be able to win. What I don't like is a situation, which is what we have right now, where government and big business are in collusion that helps big business and hurts small business. That's not a free market. That's not social justice. That shouldn't even be appealing to the left, although it seems to be appealing to a lot of people on the left. And if you want to know what a free market society looks like, well, look, Switzerland's one of the freest countries in the world in the Heritage Index of Economic Freedom, and I don't see children playing in playgrounds where nuclear waste is being dumped.
All right. Well, we leave it there for a preview of probably the debate that will ensue after the State of the Union address tomorrow and Congressman Ryan's response. Rena Steinzer, president of the Center for Progressive Reform and a law professor at the University of Maryland. Jerry Boyer, Forbes.com columnist, author of the Free Market Capitalist Survival Guide, and a CNBC contributor. By the way, speaking of NBC, Jerry, our next segment is going to be on the departure of Keith Olbermann from MSNBC. Did you see him in the halls?
No, but I'm disappointed at not having seen him in the halls. I would have liked to have seen. I was his worst person of the day in the past, so I wouldn't have minded having a chance to chat with him on the way out.
Okay. Thank you both very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Don't forget, coming up tomorrow on State of the Union Day, we will have Senator Mark Udall to begin our program. Democrat from Colorado, it was his idea for bipartisan seating at the State of the Union address. Senator Mark Udall tomorrow here on the Brian Lehrer Show. And coming up next, was Keith Olbermann forced out of MSNBC because he's just too difficult to work with or because the network's new owners don't like his politics? We'll talk to media watcher Howard Kurtz from The Washington Post. Correction, Howard Kurtz from the Daily Beast, formerly of the Washington Post, next.